Welcome to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Excuse the cold, but it's winter. What can we do? Today we're going to have a conversation with writer Jay Ferber. As comic readers get older, some may tire of the safety rules superhero stories have when published by the big two, DC and Marvel Comics. Other publishers like Image break through the glass ceiling of what's appropriate for an all-ages audience and present books that have no boundaries. Writer Jay Ferber has been testing the limits for years with books like Noble Causes, the superhero soap opera that mixes crime-fighting action with interpersonal relationships, sexuality, and problems you can find on serialized television. Ferber has written for the big two on titles like Teen Titans and The New Warriors for Marvel, but these days seems happiest focusing on his original ideas. Joining Noble Causes is a new hero team, Dynamo 5, featuring the illegitimate superpowered children of Captain Dynamo, an iconic all-American hero whose public wasn't aware of his all-too-human flaws. I want to start with Noble Causes because Dynamo 5 is kind of a spinoff, so I always feel like let's...
Yeah, a very slight spinoff. Yeah.
Okay, well, before we get to Knot's Landing, let's start with Dallas. and properly so, because Noble Causes is the superhero soap opera book.
Yeah, pretty much.
And you know, it's funny, I guess, really, going back, even, you know, certainly during the Marvel age, a lot of those characters were soap opera books.
Oh, yeah.
But I think you kind of re-emphasized the soap opera and de-emphasized a little bit of the heroic stuff, at least at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, as time went on, I relied a little more heavily on fight scenes and action-based stuff. But initially, my kind of mission statement was to kind of inverse the traditional superhero book, where you bring all the subplot stuff to the forefront and make the fight scene stuff the subplots. That's the stuff that happens off camera, off panel, whatever, and rely more on the interpersonal relationship to this family. And I still try to remain true to that vision, but there is a little more punching and save the world stuff, just because artists have more fun drawing that kind of stuff.
Well, sure.
Keeps it interesting.
Did it work from a reader standpoint in terms of maybe drawing in a female audience because of the soap opera aspect?
I think so. I mean, I don't know how vocal the female audience is, but when I've done signings and done convention appearances and stuff like that, a number of times I've had guys come up to me, or guys and girls, saying, hey, you know, this is the book I was able to finally get my girlfriend into comics, you know, by reading this, and, you know, this is the one book she'll read, and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of cool. It's, a little bit validating, I guess.
Was it your intent to always bring race back? Because I remember how it began.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was, and I, you know, that's such a double-edged sword, I guess, with that. Because, yeah, really, he was created to die. And
okay.
He would only appear in flashbacks was my goal.
Let's, before you explain that, we should set it up for people who haven't been reading Noble Causes.
Sure.
At least the introduction, it was... The relationship of Liz and Race that kind of was the springboard into the whole book.
Yeah. Liz is just a normal girl who marries into this fantastic family of superheroes. And Race is kind of their fair-haired boy. And the first issue is their wedding. And then at the end of that issue, right as they get to their honeymoon, Race gets killed.
Right.
And then the thrust of the book thereafter is Liz as kind of a stranger in a strange land, that she's the only normal person in this total family, you know, this nut job family of larger-than-life heroes who are kind of a lot scummier than the public thinks they are. And Liz is the only person who knows this.
Which also explored the whole superhero as celebrity
kind of
idea as well, because they do have this public Fantastic Four kind of aspect to their family.
Yeah, I mean, that's what one of the motivations or this little snapshot of memory that I have is my mother getting up at, you know, 4 a.m. or whatever to watch Prince Charles and Princess Di get married. And, you know, I forget what time it was in Pennsylvania where I was living, but, you know, her just sitting in her night, you know, her bathrobe, watching this wedding and knowing people are doing it all over the world. It is this huge thing. And, that's kind of what I wanted to do. And I even kind of ripped off that scene in Noble Causes, where I just cut, during their wedding, cut across the globe, showing people in all countries glued to their television sets. And you know, the Kennedy family is another kind of inspiration for the nobles as well. Just these rich, powerful, beautiful people that everybody's obsessed with, and they're all kind of screwed up. You know, their failings are very public as well.
And you had Doc, Gaia. They were the parents.
Yeah. Doc is the kind of the two-fisted Flash Gordon, kind of the, you know, adventurer inventor guy, and Gaia is this earth goddess sorceress chick. And then
Rusty.
Yeah, Rusty is their oldest son, who is was super strong but almost got killed in a big battle, and Doc was able to save him by putting his brain in a robot body. So his nickname took on a whole new meaning.
Which I love, because Rusty is like the quintessential, like, older brother of, like, the heartthrob character of,
yeah,
like, you know, seriously, man, you, like, Aaron Spelling and the Dallas people would have been very proud of Rusty, because that's just perfect. He was right. Such a misfit. I mean, like a serious Brad Garrett, if you want to put it in, you know, Everybody Loves Raymond terms.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very funny. And yep. And then Celeste.
Yeah, and Celeste is Rusty's kind of trophy wife, who's just, she was our Heather Locklear, our diva bitch that was gorgeous and everybody loved to hate her. And then there was the evil, not evil, but misunderstood half-brother, Frost.
Yes.
Who was Gaia's son through some indiscretion. And who was having an affair with Celeste behind Rusty's back. And then Race, and then teenage Zephyr, was the only,
yes,
female, the daughter of the family.
Right.
Who was kind of like a Britney Spears sort of superhero chick.
Right, who gets knocked up by a demon.
Yeah, she gets knocked up by the family's archenemy. She had a little act of rebellion there and slept with the guy. And then there was their good friend Krennic, who was their archenemy's son. But he's actually a good guy. So
right, a good demon.
Pals.
Right. And then, of course, you know, he was the beard for a while, right? The like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, he was. He kind of took credit or blame for knocking Zephyr up for a while. But even he didn't know who she actually slept with. He didn't know who he was covering for. He wasn't too pleased when he found out.
How many collections of Noble Causes have you got out?
There are 6.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and there we'll be putting together a 7th pretty soon.
Very cool. And is has 27 or 28 come out yet, the most recent book?
Let's see. 26 is the most recent.
Oh,
that
excuse
came
me.
Came out a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
And 27 will be out, I believe, the last week of this month. And 27 has the debut of a new artist who's just fantastic.
Yeah, tell us about the new artist.
Yeah, his name's, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing this right, but it's Yildiray Siner. I've never said it out loud before.
Okay.
he lives in Turkey, and we communicate completely through email, and he's just got this great, just Marvel, you know, old school Marvel style of artwork that's just, you know, you can give him 9 panels on a page, and each he'll do it and still leave room for all the dialogue, and there's tons of action going on. And I mean, he just lays out a page so well, knows when to zoom in, knows when to pull out, varies his angles, all that stuff. And it's just so much energy. It's just such a delight to work with him.
Very cool. And a new arc starting with him, though?
The new arc actually started with 26.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, you could jump on with 27, but 26 is pretty much where the new arc starts. And that'll last 7 issues, probably.
Okay. And we didn't mention the Blackthorns. They're another...
Right. The Blackthorns are kind of a recent addition. We reveal after a while that there's this kind of opposite number of the Noble family named the Blackthorn family, who are just evil. My take on them is, where the Nobles are the Kennedys, the Blackthorns are like the John Gotti family.
Okay.
They're criminals, you know, and everybody knows it, but at the same time, there's a certain segment of the population that likes them and looks up to them and thinks they're cool and all that kind of stuff. You know, they take care of their neighborhood and they, you know, that sort of thing. So it's not just black and white. And so there's long-standing rivalries between these two families, and there was a unfortunate battle between them years ago where one of the Blackthorn's children was killed in a fight with Race. And then there's, you know, you'll have some Romeo Juliet stuff going on between some of the kids, little romance here and there between Noble kids and Blackthorn kids. So it's definitely breathed some new life into the book, I think. And they play a huge role in this new arc, too.
I think, much like Robert Kirkman, you have created your own universe of heroes and villains.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've had a couple of Image superhero books now that, I'm able to use characters from. And in fact, I'll give you, well, it's not quite an exclusive, but almost, Dodge from Dodge's Bullets shows up in Noble Causes in a couple issues.
Oh, that's great. And I want to get to Dodge's Bullets, because that's a detective character that I have a fondness for. I enjoyed your first graphic novel with him.
Yeah, thanks. There came an opportunity in Noble Causes where I could use a private eye, and I thought about creating one, and I was like, you know what, I have one. And, I mean, it obviously, if you've read Dodge's Bullets, which is just a straight crime book, I mean, it's my Rockford and my Spencer. There's no superhero element at all to it. So I did give it some thought, like, do I want to cross these genres at all? And I was like, who cares? You know, I don't know why I'm, you know, I don't need to be constricted by artificial rules, I guess. And, you know, if I do another Dodge solo project, it'll be another straight mystery. You won't have Dodge fighting Dr. Doom or anything like
okay.
that. But I think it's kind of fun to just have him pop up in Noble Causes. For
yeah, why not? Absolutely. Well, it's like Bendis did that with Jinx popping up in Sam and Twitch.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and I mean, I think that was, you know, certainly in the Spawn universe, so why not? I think that's great. Before we get to Dodge's Bullets,
sure.
there's another spinoff that now is resulting in your new book Dynamo 5, because yes. I guess Captain Dynamo first appeared in Noble Causes.
Right, Captain Dynamo. He's appeared in Noble Causes a couple times, but the first big appearance was in a book called. We did these occasional anthology issues, and they're called Noble Causes Extended Family, where I invite other creators to tell their stories about the Noble family. And in the second volume, I did a story that guest starred Captain Dynamo, who was this. The Nobles have a big party, and Captain Dynamo hits on Liz. He's this womanizing superhero. And then we find out that he's under control by this alien, you know, parasite thing, and he goes all crazy, and there's lots of fighting. And once they free him, he tries to write off his womanizing behavior on, oh, whoa, that was just the alien talking. And Liz is like, no, it wasn't. You know, I can tell, and you're just kind of a scumbag. So that set up the Dynamo 5 series. I mean, I was laying the seeds even then that he's not the greatest guy. And in Dynamo 5, he gets killed in Noble Causes as well. That was kind of setting up another story. I wanted to introduce an assassin called the Widowmaker. And so the first time we meet her, she kills Captain Dynamo and then sets her sights on Liz from the Noble family, hired by the Blackthorns to kill Liz. So, or Race, I can't even remember who.
Okay.
Kill one of them. anyway, Dynamo 5 spins out of Captain Dynamo's death. His widow finds out that he has fathered, about 5 illegitimate kids, and now that he's dead, his city is just come under siege by all his enemies. So his widow rounds up these 5 kids and, you know, realizes they have his powers. They've each inherited one part of his powers and, you know, combines them into a superhero team. And they have to save the world and come to terms with the fact that, you know, they have these half-siblings that never knew existed.
Yeah, it's almost, it's funny, and I read this in one of your interviews, to prepare for our interview, where it's the inversion of the usual superhero family, because,
yeah.
You know, and explain your theory about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote the DC comic Titans for a while,
mm-hmm.
and my editor on that was saying that he was trying to ask me what defines the Titans, what makes them different from the other superhero teams. And I said, well, they're like a family. And he was like, bull. Every superhero team is a family. They all say that. They're all like, we're not just a team, we're a family. And that stuck with me. He's dead on the money. And so the Dynamo 5 they're the opposite of this team of strangers who come together and, you know, treat themselves like a family. They literally are family. You know, they're blood relatives, but they're strangers.
Mm-hmm.
They have no, at the outset at least, no allegiance to each other, no affinity for each other. They're just bound by blood. So it provides a unique hook, I guess.
Well, and I also like the idea, too, that it's Captain Dynamo's widow
yeah,
that puts,
I mean,
the family together.
I was pitching the book to Eric Larson from, you know, the publisher of Image on the
mm-hmm.
phone a couple years ago when I first had the idea. And I got to that part about, you know, that it's his widow that brings them together. And Eric just laughed, and he's like, you had to figure out a way to work some soap opera into it, didn't you? It just, you know, it just keeps things interesting.
But I like
so,
it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Kurt Busiek's Astro City, in that there's a what-if quality to this,
mm-hmm.
where
yeah.
certainly the background of the widow has a very familiar Lois Lane kind of
right.
you know, touch to her to
right.
her story, which is great. I mean,
yeah.
I think that's fantastic. It's, you know, kind of a bitter, dark side Lois Lane.
Yeah.
You know, really kind of having to keep the, you know, the false image going on about Captain Dynamo, and I think that's great.
Walking reminders of, you know, what a jerk her husband was. So every time she looks at them, she just sees that. So it's really, it's a pretty big sacrifice for her to swallow that for the good of this city, basically.
The art looks fantastic. I saw the five-page preview.
Yeah, he's another, he is friends with Yildiré, my Noble Causes artist. Mahmoud Esrar is the Dynamo 5 artist. And in fact, he actually, when I needed a new artist on Noble Causes, he suggested Yildiré. So these two go way back.
That's really cool.
Are good friends and both amazingly talented guys.
Well, that's great, man. And it's cool that you're getting, you know, international guys to kind of, you know, do it. It's funny. Is there any kind of interesting quality that you've discovered when an international artist is doing what really are traditional American kind of superhero stories? Are you finding any interesting differences?
This is going to sound so shitty. Sorry, can I say
no,
that?
You can say anything you want, man. Yeah, when you said bull earlier, I was going to say bullshit. Don't worry. Yeah, say whatever you want.
The work ethic is the biggest difference.
Okay.
These guys, because I've worked with foreign guys in the past as well. The guy who did Noble Causes for 18 issues was Spanish.
Okay.
A guy named Fran Bueno. And I've worked with some other guys, too. I did a Firebirds book, a one-shot with, I believe he's from Argentina, a guy named Andres Ponce. And these guys all seem to, their common thread is this amazing work ethic to just bang out pages. And, you know, I'm not saying that American artists don't have it, but, you know, you look at all these late books here and there.
Sure.
And, but I don't see, to answer your question in another way, I don't see any kind of foreign influence. I mean, all these guys are very much influenced by American comics and, you know, John Byrne and you know, Adam Hughes and all this stuff. So I don't look at it and see, oh, a foreign guy drew this. It's more in their sense of discipline, that sort of thing.
Okay. The first few issues of Dynamo 5, and maybe it's going to be a standing thing, they're going to be standalone issues.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's the first four issues are very standalone. I mean, there's a couple little threads that weave through, and then issues 5, 6, and 7 are going to be more like a kind of a three-part season finale with, you know, it's one big story. And then 7 will be the end of that arc, and then 8, 9, 10, 11, they'll probably be standalones, and then we'll lead up to another, you know, double or triple part, you know, conclusion to that arc for the trade paperbacks. But I did want to, that was, I'm trying to exercise different muscles with Dynamo 5 than I did with Noble Causes, in that I want there to be more structure to the stories, so they're more self-contained. I want there to be more villains, so I'm going to try to introduce a new villain almost every issue.
Wow.
I want to have more of the, just the fun toys that come with superhero comics, the secret identities and secret headquarters and the signal watches and just all that kind of stuff. So I'm using all that, those toys with Dynamo 5.
Who are your writing influences?
For comics, it's, I mean, the first book I really actively followed was New Teen Titans. So the Marv Wolfman, George Perez influence is definitely still there.
Okay.
I was also similarly influenced by Fabian Nicieza. His New Warriors run was also a favorite book of mine when I was in high school and college.
No, he's a great writer.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Great guy, too. I was at the Marvel office one day and just ran into him and recognized him and, you know, boldly introduced myself, and we had a nice chat. And he's been there for me when I've had just kind of questions about, you know, career decisions, that kind of stuff. He's always been real helpful.
Okay. What about outside of comics? Because I know you're a big TV and movie buff, and we're going to get into that. But
just in comics, there's a couple more I want to mention.
Sure,
just,
please.
You know, Mark Waid is really big too. I mean, there's some stuff of his that still just blows me away. John Ostrander's Suicide Squad was huge for me. Mike Grell's Green Arrow stuff and his John Sable.
You bet. You came at a good time, man. That was that very fertile time in the 80s when there were a lot of interesting ideas happening, and everyone was kind of breaking out of that mold of,
I mean,
you know, comics for 12-year-olds, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I was just getting into comics then. It was very cool. And Brian Bendis as well, too, just, even, you know, as a more recent influence, just in terms of just breaking down the walls a lot in terms of not being afraid to have characters talk. I was always under the, you know, the whip of Marvel editors saying, like, oh, this conversation you have goes on for more than a page. Can't you have them, like, fighting a big robot while they're talking or something? And, I mean, it was literally one of the notes once. I had, in the New Warriors, two characters talking or three characters having a conversation, and the editor was like, let's have them, like, in the danger room, just having a workout so they could be flying and using their powers while they're talking. And, you know, I didn't change the dialogue at all, just changed the art direction so that, oh, now they're fighting the big tentacles. And, you know, just, but yeah, TV and movies, David E. Kelly fan.
Okay.
When David E. Kelly was good years ago with the early Practice and Picket Fences. That
sure.
Kind of stuff.
I'm afraid of what he's going to do with this great British TV show that's
on.
Life
on Mars.
Exactly.
Yeah. Scary.
He's doing the pilot, you know, for the American version.
I know. I heard that. And it's oof.
That's the feeling I had, man.
I know. Stephen J. Cannell's another one. Just, you know, he did so many of those great 80s shows that I still love. Rockford Files, Greatest American Hero, Wise Guy, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And he had a really, and he's also, he has great novels out these days, too.
Yes, The Plan.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I've read a couple of those as well. Yeah, they're really cool. He's a great concept guy.
Yeah, oh, I know. Just these high concepts and, just the situations he puts his characters in are just amazing.
I'm with you. And also, I remember, I think, I want to say, because this was probably like a couple years ago, I remember seeing you on a thread at James, the Isotope guy, Sim? Is it Sim?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was a conversation about either Spencer for Hire or Robert Parker
probably,
or something like that. Yeah. So, you know,
huge Spencer fan. Parker fan in general.
Me too. Now, I got to admit, I'm not a big Sonny Randall fan.
I read them all. You know, I'm not as crazy about Sonny. And, I mean, I guess I'm not as crazy about Parker in general these days as I used to be.
Yeah, they are a little tired.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't think any of Parker's heroes has ever been wrong about anything, you know?
Oh, I don't know. I think Spencer kind of screwed up way back, like around Catskill Eagle or right before
that. Yeah, and with
Rachel Wallace.
Candy Sloan and all
or
that
Candy
stuff.
Sloan, yeah.
I guess. But I mean, whenever there's a mystery, the hero usually sort of figures, you know what, I think this guy's doing it. And the rest of the book is him just proving or going after that guy. You know, there's never, not enough.
Mystery?
Yeah, not enough mystery, I guess. I mean, but I guess it was the last Spencer. I guess I'm correcting myself already. The one with the hooker that comes back again.
Yeah, I haven't read that one yet. No, I know what you're talking about, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say that in that one, it does, there is a little more mystery and a little more, you know, Spencer not figuring things out until, you know, the end of the book.
I just didn't like the shifting of, I liked him, like, you know, fighting Willie Pep back in the day, and, you know, I liked all that stuff. I was kind of disappointed that it seems like you got to put Spencer in the time machine and everything.
A little bit, but, I mean, they still talk about him being pretty, you know, pretty old for, you know, your two-fisted private eye hero.
That's true.
They don't pin him down, but what about Robert Kraes? He's my new favorite.
You know, I haven't read him yet. I've got a crime novel buddy that loves his stuff. And
it is unreal.
Okay.
So good.
Oh, that's good.
He's a huge comics fan, too.
Oh, that's cool.
In fact, he gave me a quote for Dodge's Bullets. I sent him a copy of it.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, he's a really good guy.
Wow. Well, that's always good to hear.
He and Peter David, I don't know if they're friends or they just, I don't think they're friends, but I.
Like, encountered each other.
Mutual admirers of each other's work, I guess. But
that's
cool. But there was a little, he's referenced Peter David in one of his novels, and Peter David referenced Robert Kraes in one of the Hulk issues, you know, this 10 years ago, whatever. But yeah, there's little in-jokes. His private eye character is a big pop culture nut, so there's lots of comic book references and stuff like that.
That's cool. Do you like Jesse Stone?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I like Jesse Stone, too. You know, I keep meaning to sit down and watch the rest of it, because I taped it when it was on, like, 2 years ago, but that Tom Selleck...
there's been three of them already.
Have there really?
Yeah, and they're doing a fourth. Maybe there's been four, and they're doing a fifth. I don't know, but there's been numerous TV movies with him.
Now, who did you always see as Spencer? See, I'm a Parker nut, so yeah, that's why I'm going to
stay. Yeah, I mean, I discovered Spencer through the show. So to me, Spencer's Robert Urich.
Okay,
can't separate the two.
Well, you're a little bit younger than me, but I can appreciate that, though. That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, that's where
casting.
I discovered it. What about you? Who was your pick?
See, I always thought Stacey Keach, and this was before Keach was Mike Hammer.
Okay, right.
And I just...
But this was before he was Mike Hammer, you said?
Yeah, because I started reading the books, like, maybe a year or two before the series started.
Okay.
Because, yeah, it was like my early 80s.
Yep.
That's when I first started reading and stuff. And I thought, I mean, my God, Avery Brooks was perfect as Hawk.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody better.
See, Parker's never said this, but I think you could almost see him adapt Hawk to Avery Brooks. Like, some of the things he describes about Hawk after the show seem to be, you know, reflective of Avery Brooks.
No, I agree with that.
That's just me,
I can't. I have heard him on a bunch of interviews say how pleased he was.
Yeah.
With Avery Brooks. I mean, and even like was always kind, I think, to Urich, and never like, you know.
Yeah. He's very diplomatic about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's television pretty boy, I think. But I have to say, I think Urich kind of matured into the role, and I even think
I think so too.
Canadian movies, I think he did good.
Yep. If they weren't so god awful.
Yeah,
the first two I liked, the one Parker actually wrote the screenplays for.
Yes.
But the second two I just thought were horrific.
Yeah, it was then I remember they had that one woman, like the new Susan.
Susan like every movie practically.
Yeah, she couldn't hold a candle to the one that was in the TV show.
Yep.
So too funny, man.
Yeah, but the Tom Selleck thing, the only thing that bugs me about that is he created Jesse Stone to be a younger guy. And then you have Tom Selleck, who's Spencer's age.
Exactly, yeah.
So that's a bit of a tough pill.
No, I agree with that. Busick.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Busick and Rucka are huge Parker fans as well.
Oh, yeah, I know. I did a signing with Busick up here, and I live outside Seattle. We both did a signing up here, and half the signing was the two of us just talking about Spencer. I don't know if the people who were around were interested or annoyed by it, but it was just he and I discussing it. It was pretty funny.
That's cool. Is he on? Is Parker on a lot in Washington Radio?
I don't know. I don't listen to Washington Radio that much at all.
So okay.
I couldn't even tell you.
Because we for WGN the Cubs.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they have a great interview show at night called Extension 720.
Okay.
And Parker has been on that thing for over 20 years.
Wow.
And yeah, pretty much anytime he has a new Spencer, it's time to visit with Robert Parker again, which is great. Yeah.
I'd love to hear him talk. So. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, the little crossover thing for me is that I'm also a huge Magnum PI fan. And so to have Magnum play a Parker character is pretty funny.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I came to Magnum late when after he almost died.
Oh,
my friends are like, my friends are like, you know, you really have to watch it because they've really dropped the cheese and it's like, it's actually kind of good. And I'm like, all right.
I mean it evolved over the years.
Yes.
And you know, I've heard other people say that it got worse, but I think it got its own identity as it went on.
I agree.
In the first couple of years, it was just very procedural, private eye stuff. But Aaron Sorkin is huge.
Sure. Do you like Studio 60?
You know, I'm partway through last night, and that's a tough question. Well, ultimately, no. I mean, I love the idea, and I like a lot of the characters to an extent, but just his execution, I don't know what he's trying too hard to please people he shouldn't be trying to please, I think. It just frustrates me to no end. I sit there watching it, just screaming at the TV.
Well, and also the thing that always drives me nuts is he went from, like, okay, Sports Night to the West Wing, where it was, Mr. President, we have an international crisis, to Mr. President of the network, we've got to win Friday night. and the weight of the situation, I don't give a shit if this show succeeds or fails.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. I do. Like, I don't mind taking, you know, that these people take this job seriously. You know, you should take your job seriously.
Certainly.
I don't mind that. What I mind is that they seem to be shying away from the behind the scenes of the television show to just, is this character going to get to go on a date with this character?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I could see that on any TV show, just randomly change channels. It'll be some romance plot.
Sure.
You know, it's just, I really feel like he's kind of intentionally trying to dumb things down or something. Just these, you know, I don't care whether these two people hook up. I want to see the behind the scenes of the TV show, the writer's room and the option agreements and all that stuff I just find interesting because there's nothing else like it out there. So it's annoying. But,
what do you think of TV detectives? Because I think the genre is in an interesting transition point now with some of the TV shows that are out there. Like, and it's funny because, and I want to talk about Dodge's Bullets, when Psych came out, you take away the psych aspect of it, he reminded me a lot of Dodge.
And
you were first, so I say that, you know, very confidently that, that was, when I saw Psych, it reminded me of Dodge's Bullets.
That's funny. Yeah, I appreciate that. Psych is interesting. I mean, I think I've watched most of the episodes, but the character gets on my nerves a little bit.
Okay.
I think it's a little too much shtick.
Okay.
With the show.
How about Monk?
Monk, same thing. Like, I just have a weird, my quirk threshold is lower than most people's, I think. So, like, there's a little too much humor for me that I just lose interest.
Well, that's always
Veronica Mars, I think, is A+. I just love
that's cool.
that show.
That's cool. See, I was gonna say before we get to another one, okay. that's always the fear because you look back at like Blazing Saddles, and it's like that's when the Western was starting to get a little old and creaky, and it's like okay, let's twist it and make it a comedy, and the same goes with the detective. So, but go on, Veronica Mars. And...
Yeah. I mean, Veronica Mars, I love. I just think that show's great. I mean, it's laugh out loud funny, but it also has weight to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Monk has. I've only seen a couple of Monks, and I know that there's some darkness to that. His wife died or something like that.
There was some darkness to it, but they seem to have moved away from it and really like to play with the whole Rain Man thing more than they do.
Yeah.
Really, this kind of core tragedy that he was really working hard to piece together his wife's crime, but they've they've kind of abandoned that and really gone for the shtick. I think it's funny.
Yeah.
And I do like it, but I agree. I miss that part of the show, which I thought kind of gave it an interesting center.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite shows that was very funny and just off the wall quirky was Due South. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, absolutely. The Mountie Show, yeah.
Yeah, love that show.
Yep.
And that, to me, when it was good, it really walked that line just fantastically.
Mm-hmm.
There were just these absurd things, like seeing the ghost of his dead father and his deaf wolf talking to the wolf all the time. And just really funny, but yet then there were episodes that were just so dark that I just thought it was fantastic. And so that's, if there's going to be quirk, I like there to be kind of an equal amount of just absolute darkness going on. I guess I'm a morose person. But,
and let's talk about Dodge while we're talking about detectives, because, I remember reading in the articles as you were preparing the book, and you kind of tease us with some art here and there, that certainly this was, an homage to things like Rockford and characters like that that you grew up with and enjoyed, old TV detectives of yours.
Yeah. Yeah, he really was. I mean, it was basically that my three main PI influences were Rockford, Spencer, and Magnum.
Okay.
And I really came to Rockford late. I didn't get into that till it was on, like, daily reruns when I was living in New York, which was just, like, 6 years ago. So I just didn't, I think it was on, like, twice a day. So I just devoured it every single day and was just like, wow, this, because I always heard, this is the best Private Eye show ever. It sets the standard. And I was like, we'll see about that. And I was like, oh, they're right.
Yeah.
Just note perfect. And it was. So Dodge was my attempt to, kind of my love letter to all that stuff. And attempting to update the genre a little bit, too, just in terms of, he's computer literate and his kind of quote-unquote office is a cyber lounge just with, a coffee shop and that sort of thing. It was just a lot of fun. And I still want to revisit the character probably as a novel. I mean,
I really want
to write a novel one of these days.
Fantastic. Oh, I think the character does lend itself to more stories. And it's as much as I've enjoyed Noble Causes and am looking forward to Dynamo 5, I really am curious about seeing more of Dodge. And I've seen it pop up occasionally as possible projects with other publishers, and I'm like, ooh, when?
Yeah, I mean, we always, there was talk at Moonstone about doing it once, and then it just kind of fell apart, mainly on my fault, because I just couldn't get the story together.
Okay.
I think it's probably dead as a comic book project for the time being, at least. But I do, I've wanted to write a novel since high school, and I'm finally at the place now where I kind of have the right discipline, I think, to make myself do it. So just a matter of starting.
Cool. Well, I wish you luck on that. Are there other genres that you would like to explore? Because I think your superhero stuff is interesting, and you do always look for the quirks.
Yeah.
Rather than, just go with something traditional. But are there other genres, science fiction, westerns, anything that you'd like to try?
I'd like to dabble in both sci-fi and westerns, if I can find a different angle on it, something that makes it interesting to me. I really have no interest as a reader in fantasy stuff, Lord of the Rings, that kind of stuff. Conan doesn't do anything for me.
Okay.
But just as a challenge, it might be fun as a creator to come up with something that does interest me and is still kind of in the confines of that genre. But right now, I'm really just got my hands full with Noble Causes and Dynamo 5, and then, puttering around with a novel in the spare time.
Within your superhero work, are we going to see you flash back to any earlier ages? I know you've done a little bit where we've seen kind of Doc, Krennic's father, whose name always...
Drakonis, yeah.
Thank you, Drakonis. And, we've seen a little bit of that, but would you ever see any Golden Age stories in your superhero universe? Silver Age?
There would be flashbacks within the books, but I don't see any kind of, full-blown spin-off, projects or anything like that. But I do... I mean, there's already an issue 4 of Dynamo 5. There's a real brief flashback to Captain Dynamo in his prime, having a battle with his archenemy. It is. Most of my heroes have been around long enough, or at least some of them have been around long enough to warrant that kind of flashback stuff. So, I'm sure it'll happen here and there. But like I said, nothing for a standalone project.
Okay. And I noticed that also one of the things that the Dynamo 5 are going to have to contend with is a new Captain Dynamo.
Yeah, there might be a new Captain Dynamo running around, or at least there's somebody who looks like him and flies like him and stuff. And so far, they don't know what to make of this. So I felt it was appropriate to do that just because there's, it's kind of the staple in superheroes that when somebody dies, somebody else adopts that mantle and carries on. And here we're going to have his actual kids being like, whoa, who's this character? And what if we're not cool with that? So
sure.
It should be interesting. There's going to be some cool reveals with that storyline, I think.
You've had moments where you've worked for the big two. You worked on the Titans for mm-hmm. DC, and you worked on New Warriors for Marvel.
Yep.
Do you still pitch to the big two?
Not lately. I mean, the last thing I did, they came to me about, which was this god-awful Captain Universe 5th week mm-hmm. stunt thing.
Yeah, I thought it was god-awful, too. I remember.
I guess I just don't play well in that sandbox anymore. I just do my best work when I'm not writing for somebody, mm-hmm. when I'm just writing for myself, I guess. I think I tend to overthink things when I'm doing it on a corporate character. I mean, there's been stories I've written that I've been really proud of at Marvel and DC, but, by and large, I'm most proud of the stuff I'm doing on my own. It's more freeing, I guess.
Well, and you only have to worry about satisfying yourself rather than, working for a corporate character that's been around for so long and does have not only its history, but there are expectations, I think. And,
yeah, there's expectations.
And other keepers of the gate that are, watching out for, Hero X would never do that.
Right. And not only that, but, you can't do this because in this other book they're doing that, and you have to set up this for this character in this other crossover book that's happening, all that kind of stuff.
I can understand that, and I can appreciate the frustration of a lot of guys that are writing monthly books at the big two that have to put the brakes on whatever story they have in progress because, massive event of the year is coming up, and you better tie into it, and you're going to have to drop whatever you've got going on in your little monthly.
Yeah, exactly. It's the guys who've been doing it for a long time. I don't know how they do it, if they have my admiration, that's for sure.
Would there be any other potential crossovers with other Image superheroes? There's always talk about that. I don't know how well that works, and I don't know if you've got any other Image creators that you've ever even discussed that with.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I've done a little bit of stuff with Invincible before, and some of Kirkman's other characters have popped up here and there in my books and vice versa. And I know that Savage Dragon's doing kind of a tour of the Image universe, and I believe he's going to meet up with Dynamo 5 within the Savage Dragon book.
Okay.
But it is kind of... Most Image creators are cool with it, but it's just sort of... It's hard to do an actual crossover just because of scheduling issues. Image books aren't always on the tightest schedule, so there'd be no guarantee that the first part of the crossover wouldn't come out, after the second part, that kind of thing.
No, I understand. Well, what's the... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so there are no real plans for me to do any of that stuff. it's exciting as a fan to think about that, and I mean me as a fan, just like, oh, it'd be neat to team up with Invincible and that sort of thing. But really, I mean, these days, if I want to have a guest star, I usually just bring in one of my other characters or create somebody new that I have full control over that can, you know, play that role in the story.
Well, that's cool. So give us the lowdown then. Dynamo 5 debuts in March?
Yeah, March 7th, first Wednesday in March.
Okay. And the next Noble Causes will be in March as well?
Well, next Noble Causes will be out last week of this month, February 28th.
Very cool.
Noble Causes 27th. So the shipping schedule is basically the first week of the month, Dynamo 5, last week of the month, Noble Causes.
Excellent. And hopefully in the future, a Dodge's Bullets book.
Yeah, at some point. Don't hold your breath. But
all right, fair enough. But every now and then I'm going to...
something I want to do.
Good. Every now and then I'm going to bug you about it. So
yeah,
that's
all
cool.
Right. Sounds good.
Well, listen, Jay, that's great, man. Congratulations, because I do think you have a very unique writing voice, and I'm glad to see that you are creating your own characters, because it allows you to be the writer that you are, as opposed to serving other masters. So
yeah, exactly.
Good luck with both Dynamo 5 and Noble Causes, and I appreciate your time.
Well, thanks. I appreciate you having me.
A great conversation with Jay Ferber. Don't forget, you can catch the latest issue of Noble Causes at the end of February, coming from Image Comics. Also from Image in March, Dynamo 5 should be that first week coming out. Plus, hopefully down the line, we'll see the return of his great detective character, Dodge, in Dodge's Bullets. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks a lot for listening. This is John Suntress. Don't forget, Word Balloon is all over the internet. If you want to find us online, we're at iTunes, our own website, wordballoon.com, also Comic Space at comicspace.com/wordballoon, myspace.com/wordballoon. And if you want to pop in a review and tell the people around the internet how great Word Balloon is, you can write a review for us at iTunes. You can go to dig.com, D-I-G-G.com, and give us a dig. That would be terrific. Or if you have any feedback and want to tell me what's wrong with Word Balloon, I'm always available, john@wordballoon.com. Some great new shows coming up, so stay with us. It's convention season. And we've got a lot of news coming up and a lot of guests that will be talking about new projects in the weeks ahead. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2007.